Mark Dernberger on the road again, and we are in Cincinnati, Ohio, with Paul Jellison at WLW, going through that historic transmitter plant. And today, we tour the 500,000-watt transmitter on the air in the mid-30s on WLW. Big, wide steel staircase.
Yes.
Oh, my word.
This is the...
Oh, my goodness.
This is the transmitter that I think caused Hitler to call Powell Crossley the liar of Cincinnati, because he could hear it over there and didn't like what was being said about him.
I'm speechless, which for me is really something.
My word. It is a rather impressive piece. The place is very clean. It's been well kept, and I want to, every time chance I can get, to thank the Harris Corporation. For two weekends, they had probably 15 or 20 employees out here on a Saturday cleaning this place up. The amount of manpower that we got to because this place was just covered with junk, and I vowed to not let that happen again.
Right.
But it is just incredible the way this place looks. I mean, they armor-alled the front of the cabinet, and, I mean, they really did a great job.
Well, the cabinet, ladies and gentlemen, consists of first of all, in a macro sense, it's a huge black box. It looks like it's about 50 feet wide and maybe 20 feet high. Huh?
Yeah, I think 56 feet.
Now, this was an RCA design, a GE build, and a Westinghouse control.
Westinghouse did the controls, and I think they might have done the transformers. You're right. RCA was the prime contractor, and GE was involved as well. So you'll see, basically the big, what I call the big three, hands were on this unit.
Is this the same one that RCA decided to build several of, which ended up at the Aspidistra project in Great Britain during the war, do you think? I know they had a bunch. They were going to build some because they thought this country was going to go superpower.
Well, you know, that could be. I don't know. I don't know about that. That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's the first I've heard of that. But yeah.
This was a beta site, maybe, for a 500,000-watt transmitter.
Gee, sounds like...
Here you go again.
Sounds like history all over again, doesn't it?
Now, I'm also told that RCA, in its wisdom, built this thing in a series of blocks, so one could fail.
Yes, they are. This transmitter is modular. They were in series, which current, you know, understanding of doing things like that seems highly unusual to put items in series. You normally parallel things. But, yes, they are redundant. You'll see there's an emergency stop switch in front of every door. And you could actually run up to this, punch the button, it would mute the transmitter, you held the button in, and as you released it, it would isolate this section and bring the other two sections back up, and you could maintain...
Oh, so it just went right around it,
You could bypass a section and get in and work on it. To describe this a little bit, there are three RF sections with their own separate door. Of course, you can enter them from the rear as well. They've got big doors. Then you've got two sections that are modulators, and then you've got the final section is the power supply.
Yep.
The idea was that you could take the section offline and work on it as needed and get back up on the air.
Now, each section, it looks like, if these are symmetrical, consisted of three of these panels. The middle panel where that red kill button is he's talking about also has water valves on it, so you can control the water in and out of the tubes.
Right, so you can, if you need to get in and change a tube, you can shut that section off.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, you notice the wheels that look like big valve handles up above, that's tuning and loading.
Uh-huh.
And those go through long drive shafts to the rear, and there's big gear drives.
Again, custom built, probably.
Custom built.
We're looking at the tubes, which were, they look like 898s, maybe?
Or I believe that's what they were. Matter of fact, there's one standing right over here. It's made by Federal. This tube,
I
stand 6'3", yeah. 6'4". And this tube hits me mid-chest. I'd say 5 feet.
The interesting thing about these old tubes, folks, is the filament leads on these things, and the current required just to light the tube was in the thousands of amperes, wasn't it?
Yes, very, very, very high power. Of course, your plate structure is probably the bottom three and a half feet of the tube, and then you have a huge glass, and on the side of the glass is a socket with a connection for your grid, and then of course your filament is actually what hooks to the top. It's actually a triode tube.
And the water connections?
What you see next to you is the actual socket for the tube, and the tube actually sets down in this water jacket, and you can see you pumped your water in, up and around the tube.
So the heat is conducted off the plate of the tube, as you discussed it, is a conducting metal, it looks like.
Yes.
And you drop that into a mate here, and it conducts the heat right out and through the... Okay.
Correct.
So that's how they did it.
I don't see a tube type. Oh, here we go. Is this it? Yeah, I think 898 is the correct term. I know there were two different types of tubes, and I think the 898 was the final tube. They had a tube before this that was DC, had DC filaments. And they actually had big motor generators in the basement to actually run the tubes. Then later on, they found that that was inefficient, and they actually got a better tube, and they ran the AC tube and did that up until the time to when they shut the transmitter down. They did, by the way, try to get this transmitter licensed up into the 60s at 625 or 650 kilowatts. And I'm told that that was the power level that the transmitter could modulate to 100% with modern tubes. They were actually going to take the glass tubes out and put in external ceramic.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think this room sounded like when this thing was running and it smelled like? Because it had to be ozone going through here.
I'm sure it did. The sound was probably not too bad because you had a lot of hissing, probably a lot of running water.
Right.
I'm sure you had the pump noise filtering up from the basement. I would imagine the sound of the modulation transformer windings talking. You could hear the station talking quite predominantly. Of course, you had fans and blowers and things, right, you know, moving air.
And you mentioned earlier that at one time there might have been as many as 13 engineers on duty, so there was probably somebody in here all the time looking at meters.
Correct. Matter of fact, Clyde Hanley told me that one of his duties was to go along with welding goggles and actually look at each tube and make sure that all the filaments were lit.
So again, back to these panels. So you had...
The three panels are about the same for each of the RF sections. You can measure temperature, you can measure water flow. You have two flow meters. Mm-hmm. Each flow meter, you have two tubes, so you have two flow meters. And each of those tubes were in parallel. And then to the right in the same cabinet were two more tubes, of which they measure the flow and they measure the water temperature. Those two tubes were operating with the other two tubes in the cabinet in push-pull. So you had two tubes parallel, but they were operating in push-pull,
right,
with their complementary
buttons. My word, think of that power.
Yeah.
And there were three of those cabinets.
Three
so
of those cabinets.
There were 12 of these tubes online under normal conditions.
Correct.
What they cost. You ever...
I don't know.
Just think of the electric bill here.
Oh, the electric bill had to be phenomenal.
The stories abound about how all the lights in Mason would dim when they brought this thing up.
Yeah, I'm told that if one of the rectifiers backfired, that they could see it on the switchboards down at CG&E control. Of course, you got to figure this was also in 1933, and you know the power generation facilities were
less stable.
Yeah. I mean they were less stable and not as much of it by any means.
Right. Can we go around the rear?
Sure, absolutely.
We're coming around the back, and now we're looking at...
That is a Faraday shield.
Yeah.
Probably the largest Faraday screen that you will ever see. Faraday screen eliminates harmonics, is what it's designed to do. You'll notice you have pancake coils on the you have two sets of coils. They're not like a traditional coil wound around a diameter. This coil is flat, and it starts in the middle and winds out towards its outer diameter.
3/4 inch copper, it looks.
3/4 inch copper tubing, not unlike what you'd, you know, it's almost like a spiral, one of those spiral psychedelic things you used to see on Get Smart or something. But that sort of describes what the coil does. The way they tuned it, that was your tuning. That resonated the circuit. And to do that...
Paul is turning a cogwheel now.
Yeah, there was a crank on the front, and you turned that crank on the front, which turned a gear down here, and actually moved a half-turn loop closer or further away from the pancake coil.
To add inductance to it.
Okay, so you've got your pancake coil, Then you had the Faraday shield, which eliminated harmonic energy. And then on the other side of the Faraday shield, you have another pancake coil that went down to your output network, to your antenna. This unit, as you can see, it is tipped on an angle. And you could actually, by turning the control, by changing the coupling, you actually moved the coil closer or further away.
So you're saying the whole 500,000 watts went through the air here for a distance of 8 inches?
Yes.
Oh, my word.
It was capacitively coupled. Of course, you got to remember, this was one-third of 500,000 watts. So.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right.
So, so we're only talking, you know.
175 or
right,
something.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. Then you'll notice that everything here is got any metal that terminates doesn't have a sharp point. It's got this large ring on it. It's a corona ring, they're called. And basically, any sharp point you get with high voltage on it will just arc into the atmosphere under a condition called corona. These are done to eliminate that. And there are countless stories that abound, but you can see where people have
touched
it with something to pull an arc.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. There's some spots on that copper.
Yes.
So there's three of these, and then there must be a combiner somewhere to bring
there's a combiner network down in the basement that switched and allowed everything to come together.
Or to operate individually?
Yes. Yeah, right. Okay. Right. Yes.
Boy, the redundancy that was built into this.
Lead line, too.
Now we're getting into the old and the new.
Yes, this is my ham repeater, which it looks like a ham repeater.
What do you tell people is your QTH, the modulator section of a 500 kilowatt? Wow.
And this is our digital link. We have a T1 line that we run audio back and forth between here and our studios in downtown Cincinnati. And one of the things that we were having trouble with was we were getting little glitches in our digital audio. And called the manufacturer, and I told him, I said, well, we're in a pretty high RF field here. He said, would that have anything to do with it? And he said, oh, no, no. He says this equipment will run fine up into fields of a volt per meter. I said, that's wonderful, but the field here is about 7 volts per meter. He's like, long pause at the end of the phone. Oh, that could be a problem.
That could be a problem.
So
you put it in here for
shielding. So I thought outside of the box, and I said, well, gee, here's a lead-lined room. I'll just stick this equipment in here, and it's worked flawlessly ever since.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Not too many of us can have lead-lined rooms solve that kind of problem.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
so
indeed.
That what remains in here is a lot of power divider, big resistors, and some
contactors. Is some of the low-level power supplies and stuff that actually step the 20 or the lower voltage 240 and 2400 up.
What was the plate voltage on this guy and the current?
Voltage was around 12,000 volts. Yeah. Matter of fact, we can walk out front here. I'll show you the power supply.
So during conditions of 100% modulation, there was 24, 25,000 volts jumping around in this thing, I think. Right?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
Wow. This is really something, folks. And this operated from May 1st or 2nd of 35 through about 1939?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah. Yes, that's correct. And actually, it operated during World War II as well. They used it for some... And I'd like to know more about this. I don't know of anybody that does, that at least will talk about it. But I'm told that WLW at night, and I had a friend of mine tell me about this, he's since passed away, said that he would listen to WLW at night, and he would hear them come on during the war and say a couple words, like just odd, bizarre words, like pelican.
Right.
And he'd say that they'd say it two or three times, then they'd read a text, and then they'd say the word again, and then just continue on with programming like nothing ever happened.
Knowing that that word was being received by the underground in Europe, more than likely.
More than likely.
Or
yeah.
Even in the Pacific, the signalist.
Yes. You can see the voltmeter, typically 12.5 kilovolts was where it ran, and the power supply typically ran 125 amps.
Talk about a welding.
Yes.
Time meter, 89,455 hours.
Yeah, that's quite a time. That's 10 years.
Yeah, the testing and everything.
Yeah, on. Yep. Yeah, with the testing.
When it operated at night during the war, was it on as W8XO or?
They actually operated it depended on what they were doing and when they were doing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they operated sometimes as W8XO and sometimes as WLW, and So I guess it depended on the era that all this was going on.
Sure.
They also operated shortwave transmitters from here. Actually, they operated shortwave transmitters from here before they did down the road at the Voice. They operated 6030, which was a propagation transmitter. They operated a couple of rhombic here and
At this site?
At this site, yeah.
How much room was that?
There's 32 acres here.
Really?
So there's a pretty good amount of room here.
Well, this tour of the behemoth at Mason, Ohio, pretty well knocked my socks off. WLW 500,000 watts, the only station in the United States to ever operate at that power level. Our thanks to Paul Jellison for this and the rest of our WLW tour. This is Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service, and we'll be back next month to wrap up our tour at Cincinnati. Till then, good listening, DXers.